Schwartz, and I'm with Kaiser Permanente, and I'm going to talk about an initiative that's very similar to C-CROP. It's funded by Kaiser Permanente. It's our community health initiative, otherwise known as HEAL, and not to be confused with HEAC, which it often is. So it's a very similar initiative. It's obesity prevention, also a focus on environmental change, and we have a lot of evaluation methods in place, but today I'm going to focus on our photo voice methodology, which is actually part of our evaluation methodology. So I'm doing this presentation on behalf of our cross-site evaluation team, of which I'm a part, and the evaluation team is led by the Center for Community Health and Evaluation. Bill Beery is in the room, and I'm also speaking on behalf of the 150 Photo Voice participants across the nation. We have 27 sites, and a fair amount of those sites have participated in Photo Voice efforts. So I'll talk about, first I'll give a brief overview of the Photo Voice methodology, and then I'll go into a little bit about the themes across the nation, some of our outcomes that we've seen already since implementing Photo Voice only starting about a year and a half ago, and then I'll end with some lessons learned and next steps. Yes. So how many people in the room have implemented Photo Voice before or participated in Photo Voice? Okay. So for those who don't know, this is the definition of photo voice. It's a qualitative methodology. It's been around for about a decade. It was designed by Wang and Burris in 1997, and it's really a method for giving a voice to underserved communities so that they can create change, bring their concerns to the forefront, and then create change to improve the health of their communities. And it has three main goals. The first one is that voice that I mentioned. It allows people to take pictures of their issues, their community concerns, and discuss them, and then take those discussions and formulate a plan for making policy change. And typically, it's used in a couple of ways. For needs assessment, that's probably the most common way that photo voice is used, also for asset mapping, similar to a needs assessment. But we took it sort of a step further, and we're attempting to use it also as an evaluation methodology, and we're grappling with how best to do that. But it is part of our evaluation plan, and we do have evaluators across the nation helping us to implement the methodology. So here's what the methods look like. We spent about 6 months creating a curriculum. We spent a lot of time researching the literature. What is Photo Voice about? What have been people's experiences using the methods? And we came up with two trainings, one that was a train the trainer and one that was a community training. So once the folks were trained, the trainers were trained, they then had a curriculum that they could go out and use with community members who were actually going to be the folks taking the pictures of the issues in their community. And we purposely, after review of the literature, made a decision to focus on adults rather than youth, knowing that youth also can implement photo voice. It's just a lot harder, a lot more resource intensive, and we didn't feel like we had the capacity at the time to focus on youth, so we allowed youth to participate within the context of their family. So along with their parents or relatives, they could participate, but our curriculum was geared towards adults. And we actually, since we started, we've had a lot of groups that have said, we're doing youth, we're going to take your curriculum and tailor it. And so we've had, actually, in that 130 participants, we've had quite a few youth that have participated, but the curriculum was designed for adults. 12 distinct neighborhoods across the nation in 5 states, starting in Colorado. That's where we first piloted it with 3 communities, but it's sort of evolved ever since to be five states taking part in 5 Kaiser Permanente regions. And we had a focus, because our initiative is on healthy eating, active living, we asked folks to take pictures of concerns related to healthy eating and active living. Now, even though we asked that, that's not what always happened, but we did try and frame it within the context of that topic area. And it took place over about a year and a half, and actually we still have groups that are folks we did train the trainers with that are now implementing even more photo voice presentations and recruiting new participants, and so it's sort of an ongoing thing. I think if I recounted, it would be way more than probably closer to 200 at this point, just 6 months later. So here's what it looks like. This is what the training looks like. We've broken it down into 2 to 3 sessions. Again, thinking about what's the capacity of our groups to do this, what are the resources that that we believe we can do given the context that they have to work in with all their other intervention plans. So the session one is a 2-hour session, usually, and it starts with an introduction of photo voice. What is photo voice? Kind of similar but more in depth to what I'm doing today with you. We get consent from all of the participants. This is the starting starting with the train the trainer model usually. We talk about the goals for the project, how this is healthy eating, active living. We brainstorm what types of pictures folks might take related to that content area. And we go over all the power issues that are related to photo voice. When, what should you be careful of? What are safety issues? What is your responsibility when you hold a camera? And then also what kind of consent you need to take a picture of somebody. If you have their face in the picture, you need to get a photo release. And just really things like that, really basic legal and ethical issues. And then we do a brief overview about documentary photography, which is basically photo voice stems from that. So we go back to the early 1900s and we take a look at how photo documentation took place and some of the changes that have happened as a result of that. For example, changes that led to child labor laws, just to give one example. So we do sort of a historical process of photography. And then we do a photography 101. The person who developed our curriculum for us, Lila Kramer, is actually a photographer. So she built into the curriculum, how do you take a picture? Where do you put the light? How do you focus on what you intend to take a picture of? And just really some basic training on taking a picture, even though we think most people know how, this was actually very well received. And then we send folks out with cameras. We use disposable cameras. Other people use digital cameras, but we found that it was easier to keep track of. We didn't have to worry about the attrition or if we didn't get the cameras back and so on. So we decided to use digital cameras, black and white, actually. And then this is what session 2 and 3 looks like. We return the pictures to the participants, and they select one or two of the pictures that mean the most to them. So not necessarily the most beautiful picture or the best picture, but the picture that's what expresses their community concern. So after they select their pictures, they break out into small groups, and they talk about what this picture means to them. Why did they take this picture? And I'll show you the series of questions that go through that process in the next slide. But they're talking about the pictures within the group discussion, and then within the larger group, usually these groups are about 20 people. So within that 20-people group, we go around the room after we've selected the pictures and talk about what are the themes. So what are the themes in the room of issues in that community, and what's missing here? What's an issue in this community that's not represented in these photos that maybe we'd like to include? Then we write the captions, and this is a process that actually takes quite a bit of facilitation. Folks can articulate verbally what the issues are and why they took the picture, but putting it down in a caption that explains something succinctly and also tells what you want to do about it is really complicated for some groups, and so this required some pretty intense technical assistance. And then we have a later discussion, usually in session 3, if we think we can bring folks back to a later session, about who are the right, now that we've picked our themes, who are the right policymakers that we need to get, and let's engage them early, and what is it going to take to be able to prepare ourselves to engage policymakers. And one thing I should say is this is policymakers with the small p. When folks thought we were talking about the large p, like legislatures, they got really nervous and didn't think that they could take that on. And some have, but for the most part, we mean small p. And I'll talk later about some of the audiences that we've used and what I mean by small p. But this is just taking a deeper dive into what contextualizing photographs means, because that's jargon, it's academic jargon, it's part of the methodology. And these five questions are really the heart of photo voice. This is the SHOWED method, and it gets the name SHOWED from the underlined word letters in each of the questions. So basically, you take people through a process of what do you see here, what's really happening, how does this relate to our lives, what can, why does it exist, and what can we do about it. And it gets pretty intense during this process. Then we go on to the policy change discussion, and again, now we've written our captions, we're going to talk about what are the implications, what should we as a group focus on, what are we prepared to focus on, what kind of outcomes would we like to achieve as a result of these efforts, and then what opportunities are coming up that maybe we could tap into, like maybe there's a city planning meeting where we could take our photos, or maybe we need to go to the Parks and Rec and they're having their board meeting. Okay, so these are our themes across the nation. There were 4 of them. One was about creating healthy and affordable food in schools and neighborhoods. One was about crime and drug activity. Then safety and cleanliness of parks and recreational areas. And then the safety or complete streets. And this woman right here on the bottom is doing a presentation to the city planners about how it's important to get a health element into the general plan, something that was discussed by previous speakers. So a variety of audiences, we've presented to a variety of audiences from police, school folks, city planners, real estate developers, neighborhood associations, transportation, parks and rec. It's been really an array. Those are just some examples. Now to show you what some of our photos look like, you can see that this is one similar to what we saw earlier. This is a convenience store in a neighborhood. You see Wonder Bread, Ritz Crackers. You can see there's not a lot of healthy food. No, there's no healthy food there. This is in Colorado. This is basically showing kids riding their bikes, no sidewalks, and into oncoming traffic. And this community was so successful in doing built environment around street design that they actually took it a step further. And this is actually the larger Denver urban area that created a countywide photo voice project so that they could then really work with transportation folks to improve the street design. This was our first outcome in Colorado. This was done by youth, and this is basically youth who went to the Parks and Rec and said, we need a clean park, we need a place to play, and they got immediately, pretty much, they got the park cleaned and they got new physical activity equipment, basically a playground at that park, as a result of the kids taking this photo voice picture. So even when we say that this is healthy eating, active living, we can't get around the violence issue. All of our community pictures, when you look across all sites, there's always violence pictures. And this basically, it reads, this vacant business property with bullet holes in the windows is located right across from our public library and our recreation center. It sends the message to children that the area is unsafe. It prevents people from using services that their taxes support. Again, a lot of violence pictures. And we tried to connect it to to healthy eating or active living. This is another picture from Portland, Oregon, and this basically was a group of Latino women who successfully advocated for a safe bike rack so that their kids could bike to school. And you'll see in the quote that it's really also one of the major outcomes is about empowerment. And now I'm going to quickly go through some of our outcomes, and you'll see that we have very quickly acquired some short wins, some of which was talked about by other speakers, short wins and actually some pretty big wins. This is a park in Colorado. This is Axum Park, and they were able to use photo voice to successfully advocate to get a multi-use bike walking trail around the park and also to improve the lighting, so it was now a safe area to play. This was a big win for them. This is a liquor store in Richmond, California, and this actually, it reads, not in my community, there's nothing healthy about a liquor store as we have far too many alcoholics in our community. We'd like liquor stores banned from our community, especially ones close to elementary schools. This was right across the street from this woman's school, and she presented this this picture, as they were making, they'd been working on getting this demolished for about 20 years, so not to say that this picture was what got the liquor store demolished, but this woman believes that her picture contributed to the removal of this liquor store. And we actually have a few buildings across the nation that have been removed, and Photo Voice has played a role in that effort. And contribution is really hard to, we're not trying to deal with the contribution factor, we're trying to deal with what are the outcomes and how does Photo Voice relate to those outcomes. This is Santa Rosa, California. This is a safe routes to school picture. Well, it's actually a lack of safe routes to school picture. And it was taken by a resident, a monolingual Spanish-speaking resident in Santa Rosa. And one of our physician champions at Kaiser Permanente took this and successfully advocated at the state level using this picture. And he got something like, I think it was $42 million allocated to California for safe routes to school. And they've gone on to get another, recently over the past 2 weeks, another $1.1 million in federal funds to build infrastructure for safe routes to school. So, what have we learned? It's been surprisingly promising, way more than we ever would have thought. It's the best way that we've seen from an implementation perspective on engaging residents, mobilizing residents. We've seen, like I mentioned, really quick changes that were beyond what people thought they could accomplish, especially when folks have used it as a planning tool and tied it to their action plan. They're able to really do a lot of, achieve a lot of their outcomes very quickly. With the caveat that it's extremely resource intensive, so folks who want to implement it should be prepared for that this is time consuming for the person coordinating the effort, keeping track of all the cameras, matching the captions to the pictures, getting policymakers to come, invitations and press releases, and if you want to do it well, it takes a fair amount of resources. And often also technical assistance. I talked about some of this, but around writing the captions, how do you help folks articulate in that short caption what it is they want to change and why, and then around engaging policymakers, public speaking, things that I already mentioned. And we also found that including policymakers at the beginning or as soon as possible and ongoing is also very important for success. If you invite them as participants, you get a lot more help in getting your policy change going faster. And then lastly, this is my last slide, these are the next steps. So basically, it's been spreading across all of our sites and beyond our sites to our community partners so that we have CHI sites and other initiatives constantly calling us saying, how can we get, you know, we want in on this. So it's definitely, we're trying to keep up with the pace of the interest. And then we're also trying to help folks tell the story at the local level, regional, state, and even national. Not just tell the story, but actually, is there a national effort that we could all advocate around? One like maybe Safe Routes to School or a transportation bill, or is there something that from all of our photos, from these 130 participants, we've got over 200 photos, is there something that we could do at the national level that will work on address national policies? So we're not there yet, but these are things that we're talking about. And then lastly, we're grappling, really, with how to use photo voice as an evaluation methodology. We've scanned the literature. We haven't seen that it's ever been done. So if anyone knows how to do this or has ever tried it, I'd love to hear from that. But we're grappling with, is it a post-photo voice, you know, at the end of the intervention, do you implement the whole photo voice methodology again, or do you do just photo documentation? Is it the same people that participated or similar people, or is it the evaluation team? Exactly what is it that can make you look at change over time? So this is probably our biggest conundrum at the moment. And with that, I'll end.
Thank you to all our presenters. We are now open for questions. I would like to invite Mrs. Genoveva, what's the last of the name? Isles Hooker, to sit right here and take questions. Also, I would move over there. And so I would like to ask you to introduce yourself when you ask your question and direct it to one of our panelists. We are ahead of schedule. In fact, you were awesome. You went fast. And so we do have time for quite a few questions. And if you could step in so they can hear you when you respond.
It's a good question, and we're so decentralized that you should contact me. Your local people probably won't know about the curriculum. So, yeah.
You know, if I can just add on to that response, is that CREP also has its own photo voice project. And we're involved in a statewide initiative to promote access to safe places to play that's called, you know, at this point, joint use. So we are hoping to organize a photo voice project in other communities who are interested in looking at opening school grounds or other safe opportunities for children. So if any of you are interested, we'd be happy to entertain adding you to our IRB and supporting you in evaluating opportunities for children to be physically active through photo voice.
Could you speak to some of the efforts you're making to take the project to scale, to move from the eight communities that you focused on to the rest of the counties?
Sure. So at the regional level, one of our primary activities has been in networking and advocating for statewide policy. One of the slides demonstrated that CROP is part of a larger initiative known as California Convergence. And we've been partnering with those other partners to move forward policies. And it seems like For us in the Central Valley, I mentioned that safe places to play was one of the challenges, and we're building synergy around increasing access through joint use, through increasing access to public space. On a regional level, we've been doing some region-wide assessments. One of them is documenting, what joint use looks like within the Central Valley. Another regional assessment that we've been working on has been, what is park and recreation? If park and recreation is supposed to be sort of the one free way that children are supposed to be able to engage in physical activity, you know, why is it sort of failing us? And in that, what we've been exploring are sort of these five A's of access: availability, the relationship between park space and where our communities are, affordability, if there are park and recreation programs, how much are they charging to involve youth? And for our low-income population, that is a huge barrier. They can't pay sometimes the $80 fee to involve their kids in, say, football or baseball, or if they have multiple children, which most of our families do, that amount becomes really outrageous for a family to be able to support all of their children being involved. So that, along with, on a regional level, we're engaging in CX3, which is the Communities of Excellence, documenting fast food density, outdoor marketing, what's available in the food retail environment. So I think those are all our ways of being able to show region-wide, working together, the importance of it, and maybe what are next steps and new policy levers that we can try to shift on the regional level.
It was actually the photographer curriculum developer who decided that black and white would represent the work better than color. She thought the photos enlarge, because we enlarge them, and so they actually end up being, they're on a foam board, and she thought visually it would be more aesthetically pleasing. So that's the only reason. And actually our sites that have spun off have been using color. So we've got a variety. But our original three sites in Colorado, it was all black and white, and our recommendation to other sites has been, we think you should use black and white, but use whatever you want to use. And so we have probably 50-50 now. The ones that I showed were the earlier ones, because that's where we've got the outcomes. So because they've been going on for longer, so they've really been able to use the photos to make change. And so that you see the earlier versions.
I think I might be able to answer your question. I think there are actually two kinds of fruit purveyance going on here. One is sort of a farmer's market type market on school property or adjacent to school property, and that's sort of a for-profit endeavor that certainly benefits, presumably, the farmer. The other kind of fruit and vegetable stand that was actually piloted in Pixley was strictly non-profit. In fact, the proceeds from the fruit and vegetable stand go back into the school to help pay for after-school kinds of programs and school trips and so on and so forth. That model is proving to be or looking as though it has all kinds of potential in terms of economic development. We've got folks working on those stands who have never had that kind of retail experience before. Also, in a very endearing sense, we've got special ed kids who bag the fruit and vegetables, counting them out into bags, which is a pre-employment skill for them. So, yeah, there's all kinds of potential.
So in those instances, the school actually purchases the produce, so there's not that personal interaction between seller and buyer?
No, in this particular case, because the fruit and vegetable stand in Pixley was pioneered in a rural community that's a food desert, where there's very low income. A major issue was affordability as well as access. And what we were able to do with the help of the food services director was to get the food through her vendors wholesale, mark it up a little bit, and then those proceeds went back into school activities. So it's essentially a non-profit kind of operation.
I'm trying to remember the first part of the question. Sorry. I heard the violence part, and maybe I'll speak to that first briefly, and then you can remind me if I haven't gotten to the photo voice question. We are dealing within the context of violence for all of our strategies in almost all of our communities, and so we're working with communities to provide technical assistance on how to develop strategies that are related to healthy eating, active living, but yet deal with violence. And people are, some of it is perception, some of it's real, but things like walking clubs, so you can walk, you walk your kids to school, and then there's a parent walking club afterwards, so you're getting your exercise with the other moms, and you're also walking your kids to school. So these are just some examples of the effort. With photo voice and violence, we haven't gone, other than the liquor store demolition, which there was violence in front of that liquor store, so that was sort of addressing violence, but not directly addressing it. It just indirectly happened to address it. And the safe routes to school, I think that was street safety, not violence in that particular community. So I'm not sure if I answered your question. Yeah. Yeah, and redeveloping the parks often helps with the safety of the violence part as well. So in that Akron Park, which I showed you, that dealt with some safety, putting lighting up, and they also improved the entrance of the park so it was more appealing, so it brought more people there. So that dealt with the violence was less likely to occur when there were more people around, so indirectly. But the street safety stuff we've dealt with a lot. We have successfully dealt with things like sidewalks and crosswalks and things like that related to infrastructure and street safety versus violence. That we have, I think, been pretty successful at. The violence one, we're actually under discussion for how do we better address this, because we know we have to.
So I'd like to respond a little bit to that piece, but just to agree with your comments is that in every crop community that we worked in, safety was a huge issue to preventing people's ability to be physically active. So one of our community groups, who is the Greenfield Walking Group, formed by a coalition of people that had begun in a nutrition class, and then they began to explore, you know, what more could they do, and our community lead there, Jennifer Lopez, began to engage them in what do you need to be more physically active, what do you need to eat better type of conversations. And there was a park that was really underutilized because all of these perceived violence and safety issues. These women organized, and they began to walk as a group. And then they began to do reparations, like the lighting. The park wasn't fully paved all the way around. These women independently went out and sought funds that they could give the park and rec department to pave the perimeter of it so that they could walk safely with their stroller around the whole area of the park. So they're really just a fantastic demonstration of what can happen when community members unite and start to advocate for this. But if you ask them, the biggest value of being involved in the project has been the building of relationships with each other, with the neighbors. That community cohesion and that sense of satisfaction has done more to reduce their fears about the safety and the violence in their community than anything else. So I think that we need to maximize on that example and continue to think of strategies that allow that community cohesion building so that these parks can be won back, so that people are less fearful to walk in the dark. The quick fixes, the sidewalks, the streetlights, unfortunately, are the ones that cost the most money, right? So we're not going to be able to quickly change that physical environment, but I think we could be quicker at trying to build these relationships between neighbors. And I think that would be a success for us to try to move forward.
I realize I didn't address your empowerment question within Photo Voice, and I have no doubt that Photo Voice builds empowerment, and you can see it anecdotally from the people who couldn't speak publicly at the beginning to now are speaking and sometimes even getting what they asked for. You know, they're getting it answered, and they're feeling like they played a role in improving the health of their community. The woman in the who presented the liquor store one was in tears during her presentation, telling how amazing it was that she had been able to make it safer for her kids to go to that elementary school. So there's no doubt. Do we have measures other than anecdotal? No, not in place. But you can ask anyone who's participated, and you'll get the same answer across the nation.
Are you referring to the picnic in the park? Okay. We asked them initially to describe what kinds of things they would like to do in this 23-acre park, which virtually has no facilities in it yet, some beautiful eucalyptus trees and some play equipment. And they came back with assorted suggestions. A lot of them. We ended up doing a vote, which meant that we took the suggestions. We want a soccer field. We want to be able to walk. We want to have picnics and barbecue, blah, blah, blah. We took pictures of those activities, and then we gave them an opportunity to vote with the pictures, because we've got a literacy problem as well as a language problem here. And so what happened was they prioritized their choices about the issues that they wanted us to focus on initially, and that's soccer came out at the top of the list virtually. That's how come there's a soccer field there now.
We have time for one more question. Hi, I'm Laura Schwartz. I'm with the Colegio de la Mujer de Norte in Mexico. And I want to say, first of all, congratulations. I mean, I think this is just so exciting. It's such a pleasure to be.
from that.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yes,
it's human.
Thank you.
Okay.